This is Attention Talk Radio, your ADHD information station, part of the Attention Talk Network. Its sister stations include Attention Talk Video, your ADHD talk show station, our subscription-based newsletter, Attention Talk News, your ADHD news source. Each media channel can be accessed at their respective URLs, attentiontalkradio.com, attentiontalkvideo.com, and attentiontalknews.com. Keep up with all the media channels on our Facebook page, found at facebook.com/attentiontalkradio.
Welcome to Attention Talk Radio, the show centered around paying attention to attention, with your host, Attention Coach Jeff Copper.
Good evening, everybody. Welcome to this edition of Attention Talk Radio. I'm your host, ADHD and Attention Coach Jeff Copper. We've got a great show for you tonight, preparing teens with ADHD and LD for college. I have to tell you, this is near and dear to Mark. I'm in the soup. My teen just started summer school at the University of Florida. As opposed to starting in September, he started a little bit earlier this year, and we're in the middle of it. I'm biting my teeth, wondering to know if he's going to make it or not, and what the grades are going to look like. So I'm really looking to absorb this show. With us in our virtual studio is Teresa Maitland. And we'll get into some details in a second, but real quick, tonight is July the 30th in the year 2014 at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. A few notes. We've had a lot of announcements as of recent because there's been a lot of telesummons and conferences as of recent. Matter of fact, last weekend I was at the Attention Deficit Disorder Association conference, actually presenting there on the impact of ADHD on sports and exercise, and had a great time. I have to do a shout-out to Dr. Ramsey. Got to hook up with him and Dr. Brown and Lori DePar and Alan Brown and David Gwert and Eileen Taylor-Claus. And really, the list kind of goes on. It was great to be there. It was also great for the several people who came up that were listeners to the show and introduced themselves, so we thank you for that. Now, with that being said, the annual CHAD conference is coming up November the 13th through the 15th. It's in Chicago, Illinois. To learn more about that, go to chadd.org. I'm looking forward to that. I'm going to be there and actually more to come, but actually going to be doing a little bit of an interview in one of the breakout sessions with a very young Formula One driver, which will be very exciting. So more on that pretty soon. But it's a great conference, a great event. Go meet your tribe and, again, check that out. Also, as we've been doing for the last couple months, Dr. Barkley has asked me to kind of promote, if you will, a website called ADHDfund.com. This website is about crowdsourcing to raise funds, and oversimplified, most research gets done by somebody who has an interest in it. What this website is for is to try to raise money to get the dollars to fund research on things that really need to be done, but there's not a lot of backing. An example of this is, I understand, glucosamine and chondroitin are things that you can get into the store that it's hypothesized that they can do a lot of help for joints and stuff like that, but I don't think there's ever been any research done because it can't be made into a brand, if you will, and is really kind of generic. So that type of stuff is really good for this. So anyway, please check out ADHDfund.com. And I think that's all the announcements. So let's get into the meat of the show. With us tonight is Dr. Teresa Maitland. She's an ADHD and LD specialist and coach in the Academic Success Program for students with LD and ADHD. That's a program in a learning center at the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. In her private practice, she specializes in preparing individuals with ADHD and learning disabilities for success in life after high school and college. She's co-authored several books, and hopefully I'm going to get this right. One is Coaching College Students with ADHD. She wrote that with Dr. Patricia Quinn and Nancy Rady, both great women that we've actually had on the show. I have a lot of respect for, so that's really good. She also co-authored two other parenting publications, actually award-winning books. One is Ready for Takeoff, and the other one, On Your Own, a College Readiness Guide for Teens with ADHD and LD. She also has a book, Coaching College Students with ADHD Issues and Answers. Again, her private practice, she functions as a professional coach and consultant specializing in teens and adults with learning disability. She's a coach. She's on the professional advisory board of CHAD and writes regularly for Attitude Magazine and Attention Magazine. And we've actually had her on the show before a couple years ago on a blog that she co-authored on the sensationalism of the media with medications in the world. It was a great show. And all, with all that stuff, Dr. Maitland, welcome to the show.
Well, hi, Jeff. Thank you so much for having me, and you got everything right. this is my favorite topic, and I know that you're really interested in this, not just about your team, but in general. So I really appreciate you asking me.
Yeah, you know, in something – I was actually – talking to somebody on the internet today in a Google support group on something we posted on, because we were posting this thing, and it was interesting because from a distance, I think people think launching your teens into college, you know, really looks kind of easy. It's an exciting time, but I got to tell you, we've been launching my son into college, and it's not that easy. It's like kind of walking a tightrope. I really like kind of a safety net, and when it works, it looks very easy, but I'm not so sure that's really the case. So I think it's a great topic. And I guess I want to begin – let's go back to high school when the teen's getting ready to go. Just because a student is graduating from high school, does that mean that they're ready for college or they should go to college?
I mean, that is a great question, and if we answer that question in general and put ADHD aside, I think that it's important to know that the graduation rates of all young people in this country are really concerning. So there's obviously some evidence that says that even people without ADHD, just because they graduate from high school, they may not be ready for the demands of college. And certainly that may be true, even more true for people with ADHD. But what I'd like to also just say is maybe there are people with ADHD that college isn't the next best step for them. You know, I've had the chance to coach a number of young adults who did not make it in college in my private practice, and we've helped them find other avenues, like maybe an art school, or maybe they're better. One young man I worked with wanted to make prosthetic devices for people. He was good with his hands. And what some of those young people tell me is they wish their families hadn't encouraged it because they hated that kind of learning, that sitting still, you know, just learning from books. So I think in general, maybe not everyone with ADHD should take that as their next step, maybe now or maybe never, but certainly not all young people who have finished high school, especially those that we're talking about with ADHD, may be ready. Even if they had great grades, they may not be ready for all the demands they're going to face in college. And, you know, I have met some families who made that decision. It's a hard decision because everybody else in the neighborhood or in the young person's social group is going off to college, but some families have done a great job of designing like a gap year experience that allows somebody to grow and mature and develop some missing skills. So I think we have to open our minds because it's a huge investment financially, right? And when it goes well, we're all happy, but when it doesn't, it can leave scars and it can be really hard for people to cope with the failure or the difficulties they have there. It can affect their whole life.
Wow. One is, real quickly, we talked about gap years. We did a show not that long ago about what a gap year is. Apparently, gap years is a gap year between high school and college, and it's relatively popular in Europe, as I've come to learn, and becoming bigger in the United States. And there's actually companies and different organizations that have programs for people in these gap years. It's like kind of intended for that. So if this is a new concept for any of you that are listening, I encourage you to go back in our archives and listen for that. Also, you said something else that was real important. And that's the financial investment, and we're very thrilled to have the EDGE Foundation, which is a not-for-profit organization that provides coaching for college students, and they actually raise money for scholarships. Shire provides a scholarship for those that qualify for a certain amount of money, and they'll fund the coaching for a particular year. And when they go off to college, sometimes, you know, it's a lot of money to go, but you want to get them started off right, and sometimes a coach is worth that investment to kind of deal with that kind of transition. And so you brought that up, which is really good. But the other thing too is, you know, you talked about college might not necessarily be the right place, and I don't know this for a fact, but I have to throw this out there. I heard that some of the trades, electricians and welders right now, some of those people, because there's a shortage, and again, I want to be careful because this is a little bit of hearsay, I'm starting to hear some of these people are making substantial money in the low six figures because of the shortage of people, because everybody has kind of blinders on that you have to go to college, and more and more I'm kind of seeing that stuff. So I don't know, you guys can send me emails and say that I'm wrong, and maybe it's but to me it kind of makes a little bit of sense. So three good things to consider at least at the end of high school before you kind of jump into it. But can you talk to us about some of the – I want to start with the bad news, but I want to kind of go to the good news after that because there is some good news. So can you talk about some of the not-so-good news and the hard truths about those with ADHD going off to college?
Yes, let me just say about, I'd say 8-9 years ago, I started reading the literature that's out there to see what was happening to, we've all been very excited that, you know, people with ADHD and LD are the fastest growing population of disabled students on college campuses, and that is really good news for those of us who have been in the field forever and for families. But I really was curious to know, like, what happens to these people once they're in college? And there's not a lot of research, but the research that's out there, and I just recently finished a study at my college, it does doesn't paint a pretty picture. It says that, in general, they are at a significantly greater risk for having academic, social, and emotional adjustment challenges beyond what their peers without these differences would have. And you know, that makes sense when we understand that, you know, success in college is much more than the academic skills. It's all those self-management, self-regulation skills that Dr. Barkley and Dr. Brown have taught us about, right, that are based on all the higher-level executive functioning skills that it takes to plan, make decisions, notice if you're having a problem, intervene. So I don't think it's surprising for us to realize that the research is painting a serious picture, so that they're going to have maybe much bigger challenges as they adjust. But then the more troublesome issue is when we look at the graduation rates or the length of time it takes people with LD and ADHD to graduate, there are some pretty significant differences. Some studies have said, some of the studies, and Dr. Barkley did one a long time ago looking at people who have grown up with these issues, and he found in his study only 5% had graduated from college. Those were people he followed maybe in a clinical setting. There are some studies nationally that are saying that the 4 to 6 year rates of this population might be only 40%. So it's concerning because maybe we're saying, you know, 6 to 7 out of 10 of the people who start with ADHD may not finish, which is really significant concern. The ones that do finish, though, there's some research that says they're going to take longer, maybe 2 to 3 semesters longer or several years longer. Can I share for a minute the study that I just finished at our college? And I want to mention that I'm going to be presenting that information at the CHAD conference in November, so maybe we can meet there.
Awesome.
Jeff, I'd like to
Absolutely.
Meet you in person. That's great.
Sounds good.
When I had the opportunity to study about 2,000 young people with LD and ADHD who had full comprehensive evaluation, so we knew it was a quality diagnosis, and a 9,000 random sample. And what we saw is that their four-year rates were 20 to 30% less than their peers without disabilities, but their 10-year rates were really so almost close to the norm. But who wants to fund somebody for a 10-year trick, right? But what we experienced in our study and what I experienced clinically is kids with these differences tend to have more withdrawals where they stop in the middle of a semester, they get overwhelmed and they withdraw themselves. They may have more semesters where they're on probation because of their grades, and they have more semesters than their peers without these differences where they are ineligible. But the good news, should we get, that's bad news, right? That's I know it's a hard truth, but it's actually, this hard truth has fired me up and Dr. Quinn and I to really say, what are we going to do to reverse this trend? And you know, a number of years ago, we worked together to write the book. She, prior to her retirement, I know she was out there talking about transition, and that's really my mission now, is to help families and help young people use the years in high school to get ready for college. So there is a lot of good news, because if we take a strategic approach, for example, in the study we had, I was really excited to see that 50% of the students we studied with ADHD and LD finished college in 4 years and had a 3.0 GPA and didn't have any of those unusual withdrawal patterns or ineligibilities.
So 50% finished in 4 years. So what enabled that?
Well, that's a good question, and I think, you know, we need to be studying who are those people and what makes them different. What we saw in our study is actually the frequency with which they met with a coach was correlated with their increased graduation rates and GPA. So I think one of the things we see, right, if we can help our young people with these differences accept and understand themselves and use resources in high school, and so that they'll use them in college. There's a number of studies beyond the one I did that says they actually might have the same graduation rates as their peers if they'll use resources, which is really great news, right? They're getting admitted. As I said before, that is really good news, because they continue for the past several decades to be the largest population of disabled students on college campuses. And because of the laws that have been enacted in the 90s, colleges have to have programs that provide accommodations that are mandated by law. But many colleges, like the one I work at, choose to also have other supports that aren't legally mandated, because today, in today's world, everybody cares about retention, right? It doesn't matter if you get in. Colleges want to retain the people who get in. So there's more services. And then we have great programs like the EDGE Foundation, that if your young person happens to be at a college that doesn't have certified coaches, our college has 2 certified coaches, and all of our Learning Center staff is getting trained in coaching, not just for ADHD and LD, but for everybody. You know, you can use the EDGE Foundation.
Yeah, absolutely. And I need to go into a commercial break, but you said something that I want to come back to after break that I didn't think of. I had a little aha, and I have some comments on it. But retention is becoming a big marketing tool at some of these colleges. I mean, they publish. This is our returning sophomores, or at the, you know, the 90th percentile, which I think is interesting, because I hadn't thought about that before. We do need to go to a break. Dr. Main, for those who want to access your book, the best thing for your books, all of them, go to Amazon.com. I would guess just search your name as an author, and all your books would come up, since you've co-authored so many of them. Would that be accurate?
That is accurate. Now, the one book that is now only available digitally, which is Coaching College Students with ADHD, that can be purchased at Dr. Quinn's website, the Advance website. But the other books, yep, just search my name, and they
Excellent.
Will show up on Amazon.
And with that, we'll be right back after these messages.
Your life, your world, your choice. This is Attention Talk Radio.
We are CHAD, the nation's leading nonprofit organization serving the community impacted by ADHD. CHAD and Attention Magazine provide science-based information about ADHD to families, professionals, the media, and the general public. Attention is the only publication in which your paid advertising promotes the mission of leadership, advocacy, research, education, and support for the ADHD community. Interested? Advertise in Attention Magazine and CHAD's website at chadd.org, or call 240-487-2314.
If you think you understand attention so well, then why are you struggling so much with it? Attention is as simple as it is complex to understand. Don't let anyone tell you otherwise. It's grossly misunderstood. Consider this. Focus on the wrong thing, get the wrong solution. In our new ebook, we'll share 5 key tips and insights on managing ADHD learned from conducting more than 300 interviews with attention experts. Download our ebook today at attentiontalknetwork.com and start understanding and managing your attention today. The average annual cost of attending college starts around $25,000. Students who have ADHD are at high risk of dropping out because they haven't learned the critical skills they need to succeed in school. Protect your investment with an EDGE Foundation coach specifically trained to help students with ADHD and executive function impairment make the transition from high school to college. Visit edgefoundation.org to learn more.
Are you always late? The Time Timer is an award-winning time management solution that's helped millions of people with ADHD manage life better. As time passes, Time Timer's bright red disc disappears. Visit timetimer.com and use the discount code ATR for 15% off.
You deserve the best-trained ADHD coach. Find one at the ADD Coach Academy, the only comprehensive ADHD coach training program accredited by the International Coach Federation. Go to addca.com and click on Find a Coach.
And now, back to Attention Talk Radio.
Welcome back, everybody. We're having a great conversation with Dr. Teresa Maitland on launching teens into college. Before the break, we were talking about retention rates and actually the good news about those with ADHD kind of going in. And one of the things that struck me was retention rates that you had mentioned. And a year ago, I took my son on a whirlwind tour of SEC schools between Auburn and Alabama, Georgia, Georgia Tech, Florida, Florida State, because those are what he's interested in. And in those trips, it was interesting to me because most of the schools were marketing their retention rate as if, hey, if you're going to send your kid here, because they're selling to the parents, like, we're keeping these kids. Because I remember back in the dark ages in the 80s, you walk into an auditorium on the introductory thing where you're at college, and they said, you know, take a look at your left and take a look at your right, and one of you is not going to be here next year at the end of the 4 years. And that was a pretty telling sign to a lot of people. There was a fallout rate. But the schools, I think, are marketing this, and I had the great opportunity of speaking at a conference at Lynn University, actually with Dr. Quinn earlier this year. And it was fascinating to me because you have institutions like Lynn University and Landmark College and some other ones that are actually catering to LD and ADHD. And Dr. Maitland, I know you have some services at North Carolina. And I think it's fascinating because I think the good news is more and more services are being provided to help students, particularly with these things, kind of make their way through, which is really, really exciting to me. Of course, the trick is getting your team to take advantage of those. But I just want to kind of say that this is because I think the schools are actually marketing that stuff to the parents, and it's a great resource.
Well, and I think, you know, as parents are looking at colleges like you did recently, I think it's important to ask, what are the resources in general on college campuses? Because our learning center, although our program is a part of a bigger learning center, our learning center is available to any student, and you don't have to have a disability, and we have a whole range of services. And then, you know, what you said that's really important is, the trick is to get somebody to use a resource, whether they have a disability or not, right? And especially mm-hmm. people with ADHD, that's the key. I want to mention that there's this huge national study called the National Longitudinal Transition Study 2 that has been tracking young people with disabilities for at least, I think, 8 years now, looking at them as they've left high school and gone on to the world. And they've looked at kids who had IEPs, you know, individualized educational yep. plans, or 504 plans in high school, and they watched the ones that went to college, and they tracked what percent of them actually registered for accommodations and what percent actually used them. And I'm going to ask you, do you want to take a guess?
I'm torn. I can argue kind of both ways. Students on their own, because many of those with ADHD are not necessarily aware, so I would almost think that the number is relatively low, but then again...
Okay, you're right.
Yeah?
It's low. I mean, and again, these are all kids who had individual educational plans and 504 plans, so they weren't all ADHD and LD, but we know they're the vast majority of the kids going to college. Only 30%. Less than 30% registered with the office on campus that provided accommodations, and out of that group, under 20% actually used them. So we're fighting a battle for a number of reasons, right, with young people. And one of the things I wanted to mention is part of the good news is programs like mine that are embedded in a regular learning center, what we've learned to do is provide services that we know will help LD and ADD students, but we offer them to everybody. So when I do a coaching group at the start of the semester, although I am still available individually to somebody with a disability, when I do groups, I open it to the whole undergraduate population. So if somebody's reluctant to come forward, but their friend down the hall who doesn't have a disability is coming to the group, they'll come. So I think a lot of people are experimenting with different models to get reluctant students who have differences because they maybe don't want to be labeled yet.
So I have to tell this because I'm listening to this in a personal experience. Everybody knows, if you've listened to the show long enough, you know I have a learning disability and dyslexia, and had I not been a scholarship athlete, I wouldn't have gone to college because as my older son, or my son in college, his math SAT beat my entire score. But I remember because I went to Indiana University, I was there on a swimming scholarship, and as an athlete, they had certain services. And I remember as Buzz Kerpius, I don't even know where she is right now, but she was the main lady in charge. I remember my recruiting trip, she sat down, and she said, you know what we're going to do, Jeff? We're going to provide you unlimited tutoring. So, like, wherever you go, you could sign up. And I was actually proud. My first semester sophomore, I had the highest – I didn't pay for it, but I had the highest athletic tutoring bill because I was like, why not take it back? I got my own private teachers because I remember I was taking calculus at the time, and the teacher confused the heck out of me, and I found a tutor that would help me, and I just remember I had to go to class all the time because we had pop quests, and I remember sitting there. If I listened to the teacher, I used to get kind of confused. And at the time – it wasn't being – I mean, I had LD and I had dyslexia issues. It wasn't stigmatized, but I just remember the way it was pitched to me. It was like an asset, and I just used to pride myself on taking advantage of it. Had it been spun a little differently, you know, I'm thinking, mm-hmm. I don't know how I would have reacted, would I have taken advantage of it or not. But if you're a college student listening to this, take advantage of that stuff. It can make your life really easy. I mean, your own personal teacher, you could ask questions and kind of like boom, boom, boom. So forgive me for digressing on that, but I just had to share that particular story. And you actually spawned a whole other show to come back and pontificate why students struggle to use these resources. But
right.
I want to kind of move on. Let's talk about why transitions to college is so difficult. And I do want to share, we did an Attention Talk video with Dr. Quinn, and she explained something to me. She says, you know, when you go to college, there's three things that are missing. You don't have parents. You don't have homework. And the thing is, you don't have teachers. And then she described it to me as I mean, don't get me wrong. I mean, there's a little bit of generalization, but so many – like when I was at Indiana taking accounting, there was like, you know, 3,000 people in this class, and you had a bunch of grad students. And she said they help you gather information, but they don't necessarily teach it. And I think that's really kind of a challenge when you transition in because, number one, you have to figure out how to learn on your own. And there's many other stuff, but I just wanted to kind of throw that out there and maybe even have you comment on it because it struck me when she said that you're right. They're not teachers always. They have a passion for the subject.
Well, you know, I love Dr. Quinn, and if you look at the book On Your Own, those are the things we said in the book to kids because we wanted them to think about, we wanted to really provoke them to realize how different it is. Like, number one, there are no adults. And we say the good news about that is you've been wanting to get away from your parents. The bad news is you have to parent yourself on all aspects of your life. My example that I always use when I talk to families is imagine on a Saturday in August, people like you, Jeff, will be unpacking your college teen, right, into their dorm room with a whole load of stuff from Bed Bath & Beyond, right?
Yep.
And the next day, they are totally responsible for everything in a world of unlimited opportunities, temptations, less structure, and no supervision. And as one student said to me after about 6 weeks of being in college, someone with ADHD, LD, and anxiety disorder, he said to me, Teresa, being in college is like being a kid in a candy store, but there's no owner. And then he said, even though I hated how my parents used to nag me, now I realize I don't know how to nag myself. So I think that kind of captures it in a nutshell that what Dr. Quinn is saying, I mean, first of all, there are no adults that are managing the kids. And unless they come to somebody like a coach, they don't have somebody processing their life with them like they did in high school, like a parent at night and a teacher during the day. So that's huge. right?
Mm-hmm.
And the second thing, as Dr. Quinn said, is professors are not teachers, and this is not meant to be derogatory. It's just the reality. Unless they were in the School of Education or they were in the psychology department, they were not exposed in their training to the same skills that high school teachers are exposed to, the skills of taking a skill and slowly teaching somebody how to do it. Now, many professors have had training in teaching because there are centers for faculty excellence on campuses and they do workshops. But it's important to know, like the chemistry professor wrote the textbook, but he may not ever have been trained in how to break it down so a novice could understand it. So all of a sudden in this setting, as you said, the young person has to become their own teacher. Information is presented in lectures, but then and there's much less time spent in class, right? The expectation is that the learner's going to go and assimilate it. And the lack of homework. I mean, I think the hardest thing for me to help young transitioning teens accept at college is if something is assigned, even if it's not graded, it still is homework. Because they come in from high school with the mentality that homework gets handed in. Well, in college, unless you're in a math or a foreign language or a science class, you may not hand anything in, but you'll have two tests the whole semester.
Yep.
But your homework has been understanding the concepts, staying on top of the reading. Immediately, unless somebody really starts figuring it out, they can get really in trouble by midterm, because their model for what school is turned upside down. And they have to rapidly come up to speed.
The best thing about you is the revelation that I got. I got another great show that I got to come back with, and that is, how do you inspire your high school student going to seek these services? Because as you just described, it was absolutely brilliant. Dr. Quinn, it was one thing, but what you highlight is, if you're the chemistry teacher, you caught that. You never took any classes on how to teach. And going back to my personal experience is I was able to get teachers to teach that stuff to me through tutors, and it's just for everybody, forgive me, I'm digressing here for a second, but when I get a great show idea, this is, by that way, how they're manufactured, it's just through conversation. This is actually great. Now, I'll ask you, actually, if anybody has any tips or whatever, email me at attention@attentiontalkradio.com, because I'd love to get your input as we kind of pull this thing together. So I want to kind of talk about some hope and some parent stuff, but again, we got to run to a commercial break. As a reminder to our listeners out there, if you just go to Amazon and type in Teresa Maitland, and let me get the spelling of the name correctly. So they got, it's TheresaMaitland. So when you're if you didn't spell it with the H, you wouldn't kind of get there. Go to Amazon, check out our books, and with that, we'll be right back after these messages.
You're listening to Attention Talk Radio. We'll return in a moment. Your life, your world, your choice. This is Attention Talk Radio.
You can't go off to school with them, but we can. Visit edgefoundation.org to learn more how an EDGE coach can help your student reach their full potential.
Are you always late? The Time Timer is an award-winning time management solution that's helped millions of people with ADHD manage life better. As time passes, Time Timer's bright red disc disappears. Visit timetimer.com and use the discount code ATR for 15% off.
Experience the difference with a top-notch ADHD coach. Find one at the ADD Coach Academy, the only comprehensive ADHD coach training program accredited by the International Coach Federation. Go to addca.com and click on Find a Coach.
Focus on the wrong thing? Get the wrong solution. Misunderstand attention and you'll struggle with it. Get 5 key tips and insights on managing ADHD learned from conducting more than 300 interviews with attention experts. Download the ebook today at attentiontalknetwork.com and start managing your attention today.
And now, back to Attention Talk Radio.
Welcome back, everybody, to this edition of Attention Talk Radio. We're having a great conversation with Dr. Teresa Maitland. I'm really kind of preparing your teens for college, those with ADHD and LD. We've had a great conversation. I've probably learned more than I ever imagined I would from this, and actually we've sparred a couple additional radio shows. But let's talk about parents and the mindset that they should be in when their teen kind of goes off to college. And one of the buzzwords I know that you use is the parents become like a co-pilot. Can you talk to us about that a little bit?
Yes, and can I share where the concept of Ready for Takeoff, the title of our book, and co-piloting came out of the mouth of a 10th grade student that I was working with in my private practice. His mom brought him to coaching because he wanted to go to college, but she was in charge, and she didn't want to be in charge anymore. She wanted him to wake himself up, him to take his own medicine and remember his own assignments. And after about a month of coaching with him, he had not changed at all, and she was so frustrated. And we talked to him and said, you know what, something has to change. And what he said is, you know, here's how I see my life. My mother's the pilot of my life, and I'm back in coach watching a movie. And she's better at it than I am. And he was really kind of emotional as he talked, and he said, I don't have good thinking skills. I don't have good planning skills. And he kept himself in the pilot metaphor, and he said, she sees the storms on the horizons, she can land the plane. And what we said to him is, unless you learn how to get up in the cockpit with her so she can teach you, it's not going to work in college because she's not going with you. So I think, you know, that experience really stuck with me, that so many young people with differences have fear and don't have confidence because they do have executive functioning problems. And oftentimes at younger ages, parents have to do all the thinking and checking and structuring because that's what led to success. But I would say even before they go off to college, Jeff, I would encourage families to start as early as they can when on certain issues, getting in this co-pilot role. To me, it's like being a coach. And what that really means is, let's give an example. Like, a lot of the students I meet have trouble waking up in the morning because, you know, ADHD goes hand in hand with sleep problems, right?
Mm-hmm.
So many times, parents will stand at the bottom of a bed all the way through high school and shake the bed and make sure the young person's awake. And that's an example. You remember the old saying, like, give a person a fish and they eat for a day, teach them to fish and they eat for a lifetime.
Yep.
Well, if the parent is the alarm clock and the young person isn't ever learning how to wake themselves up, you have to play that out. And what's going to happen when they're living at college? Well, it won't work. And I'm not making this up. Every fall, I meet students who are not getting to 8 o'clock and they're getting downgraded because they have never practiced waking themselves up with an alarm clock. As opposed to a parent that might say, like around junior year, they might say, you know, this pattern has to change. Let's talk together about what can happen so that you can learn to wake yourself up. And really, when a parent's in a co-pilot role, rather than fixing the problem and taking charge, they're actually in the teaching how to fish empowering role. So they might collaborate with their young person. And if they can't do it because their young person won't talk to them this way, that's where hiring a coach or getting somebody from the Edge Foundation is really powerful. Because the parent, if they can do it, can say, I'm not going to wake you up anymore, but I'm going to give you a period of time where we'll be in a training role to help develop a plan where you learn to wake yourself up. And this is a great example because I think it's so black and white in my world, because I meet students every year where it's like people really didn't think that in a few months they wouldn't be at the bottom of the bed. And I don't blame parents. I understand that when you have somebody with these issues, you have so many battles to fight, right? So when you're in the empowering role, when a young person has a problem, instead of fixing it and taking charge, you actually back up and you stay on the sidelines. That's my model of a coach. You think of a sports coach, right? And you're an athlete,
yep,
right? The best sports coaches in the world don't go in the game.
Yep.
They don't carry the ball. They're on the sidelines. And that's the model that I think the parents have to be in, or the co-pilot. You're sharing the controls. And in the early stages, you're maybe providing more structure, but you're collaborating with your young person and promoting problem solving and promoting how they're going to go talk to their teacher if something went wrong. And when things do go wrong, allowing a consequence to happen. One of the things I should point out, Jeff, on the website of the Learning Center website under the ADHD LD services, and our website address is just learningcenter.unc.edu, and there is a link to our page. I have some interviews that I did with four teens who transitioned to college, and they give advice to parents and teens on what they could do to get ready. And all four of them said they wished their parents would have let them have a consequence, even if it meant failure before they got to college, that their parents frequently prevented that because they wanted them to do well, and they saw that that backfired. So an empowering parent, is going to co-pilot and let the young person land the plane before they get out of, you know, before the parent gets out of the cockpit. They're going to let them practice landing the plane. And even if they have some rough landings.
Yeah, the and everybody forgive me, every once in a while, you hit a nerve there that's kind of a big deal. I've coached so many people before, and if you're listening to the show because your oldest is going to college, I recognize that this isn't going to apply to you, but there's some people out there that your oldest is going to college and you've got another ADHD, LD student kind of behind them. And what I've learned as a parent, and I didn't mean this as a parent, as a coach, the earlier you allow them to fail, the less the consequence. Every year they get older, the stakes get higher. So if I have a rising seventh grader, and last year I just let go, and he struggled the first kind of semester, and he didn't really do any good. But I know this is that if he makes it, nobody will ever see his we call it middle division grades. So if you mask, if he learns that lesson, then it's great. If he doesn't and he gets to high school, now it starts to count to college, so you don't really want them to fail because it could inhibit their ability to get to a good college. But let's say they go to college and you don't let them fail. The stakes get higher and higher and higher and higher as they get older, and your ability to kind of let go is not. And so your comment on the consequences and my learning as a parent is let them fail early and let them fail often, because if they can learn their lesson earlier, the more it's so much easier as a parent when you get older. That's my opinion, everybody. So it's not necessarily right, but you know, Dr. Maitland, would you like to comment on that? You can disagree with me or whatever, but I think, for balance.
Yeah, I think it's hard. I mean, I think that you did that is really courageous. And let me just say, you know, I say this to people, I was never meant to have my own children, but I've helped hundreds of people with their children. And I know that letting go and letting somebody have pain is really painful to do as a parent. But I think especially with young people with ADHD, if they don't experience the consequence and then have a productive way to process it. I think the other role a co-pilot plays is after you had trouble landing the plane, right? We talk about it in a non-judgmental way and say, what did you learn from that? And what are you going to do differently? Because I think those are the reflection skills that our young people don't have. But I really commend you. In the book that Dr. Quinn and I wrote for parents, Ready for Takeoff, we actually have a questionnaire to find out, are you an enabler? And if you're an enabler, we give some ideas on how to move from enabling to empowering. And we understand that it's really hard to do when you have somebody with these differences. But my concern would be, I'm concerned that teachers and parents fall in this enabling role because we either think they can't learn to do it, or it's just we don't have the time to design an empowering approach. But I'm wondering how much that contributes to the problems they have when they're in college. You know, I get really troubled that these are really bright, amazing young people, and they have maybe some of the lowest graduation rates of any at-risk group in our colleges, and we owe them the opportunity to learn how to run their lives before we let go of them. So that's sort of my passion, is if we could do it in small ways while they're at home, when there's a safety net, maybe the crises at college might not be as big. But if they are in college, we can still play this empowering role. You know, we have text messaging, we have cell phones, right? We can design interactions with our young people that are productive.
We're talking about enabling. And you know something? It was interesting to me because I've talked to people on this show about enabling and empowering over a period of time. And last summer, and forgive me, everybody, I'm sharing the story and one or two of you that are listening to this, this will make some sense. Some of you will kind of gloss over, but I can't help but share this because it was an amazing lesson I learned last summer. A very dear friend of mine had a substance abuse problem, and they did an intervention, and it didn't take. In other words, they said, listen, you know, you need to get some treatment or we're going to leave. And they actually left. They came to live with me for a period of time. And in so doing, I learned from the wife that she had been going to AA meetings. And she described to me the difference between of what enabling is if somebody's got a drinking problem and they pass out on the floor, enabling them is putting them in bed. It's better just to put the blanket over them. That's love where they are and not keeping the secret. And the analogy that I'm saying is sometimes we don't want people to hurt, we don't want people to suffer, but sometimes preventing that from happening is actually enabling because they never actually learned the lesson. And so everybody forgive me, like I said, not everybody's going to kind of get that, but for those that it touched, it'll be very, very powerful. And enabling is one of those things, again, it's hard to let people suffer, but sometimes you can't cover it up. So again, whenever I do my opinion, Dr. Bain, you want to comment on that, disagree, take the other side or whatever, or
well, I have total agreement, and I think it's hard to do. And I think you have to pick and choose, right, as a parent,
yep,
where you're gonna leave them on the floor and cover them, and where you're going to still maybe structure more. It's tricky until they have control. But I do think that I see parents every week. Like right now we're having orientation on campus, and I'm meeting a lot of families of teens with LD and ADD, and they're coming to meet with me. And one of the things we're doing is we're talking about during the first 6 weeks of school, what kind of communication do you want to have with each other? Some young people actually tell me I'm not ready to have my parents totally let go. So I think it would be helpful if, for example, one young boy this week said, I think I should have to text my mom every morning just to let her know I'm up and going to class. So sometimes when we have these co-piloting discussions at the transition time, young people will say, I think I still need my mom to help me remember my medicine. So we'll work out a plan to say, well, what would that look like? Maybe she could text you, and that means it's time for you to fill your pill box for the first week, and you could text her back to let her know that you can't just yank the support. Right, but you can develop a slow fading process where you're not enabling, but you're empowering. So,
what's powerful to me is how you're having that conversation with the teen coming in, and it's not having the conversation with the parents, but you're coaching them, and they're saying, "Hey, listen, maybe I should because." Maybe I'm reading into this, but you're having a conversation, but the teen is actually coming up with what they think they should do.
Well, that's the coaching approach that I'm trained in and that Dr. Quinn and I wrote about in the book, that if we want to grow executive functioning skills, we have to engage them in our young people. And it's really hard to do because sometimes they don't want to think, and it's hard for them to think. But seriously, just yesterday I had a mom and her son in the room, and we had this discussion, and pretty much she held back and didn't give him solutions. He's taking his medicine. He's going to be in college in 2 weeks, and he's never learned to take his own medication. So we began a discussion of how could they use the next 2 weeks to transfer that skill to him, and what did he think he needed. And we really all sat silently and let him kind of slowly say, well, I think it would help me if I sat right here right now and set the alarm on my cell phone. And if he doesn't come up with solutions, we can give him suggestions, but we want him to pick or choose what works for him rather than to tell him.
But
he'll be committed
to
the plan.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, at the beginning of the show, every show begins with our introduction. It says, this is the show that pays attention to attention. And I do like to study attention. And to me, there's two fundamental ways how you shift attention. You tell people what to do, or you create an environment for them to discover what works for them.
Mm-hmm.
And the coaching model is because parents are used to telling. And as I say, when the obvious solution isn't working, you're paying attention to the wrong thing. And when you're telling your student what to do and they're not doing it, it's not there. But when you create the environment. What would work for you? How would you remember this type of stuff? Well, maybe I should text my mom or do whatever. Now they're discovering it on their own, and they own it. It's a completely different paradigm, and it can be very, very powerful. And what I'm hearing from you is if a parent can begin to get a co-pilot and not say, I'm steering the plane, but I'm here to help support you in what works for you, it can really change the tide for those students that are going in to really make that transition.
Well, I think that is exactly right, and I think at times parents have knowledge. I mean, certainly all the time they have knowledge because they've watched this young person grow, but I think if we can learn to share like a suggestion rather than tell the person what to do. I saw that breakdown last week with a different family where he was learning to do his laundry before he came to college, and the mother said, well, here's what I think you should do, and you could see him shut down. So I suggested to her, what if she just said it like a suggestion and let him pick or choose? That changed the whole dynamic. Because I think when you have wisdom as a parent, you want to teach it to your young person. But if you kind of shift out of the pilot role and you go to co-pilot, you're saying, may I share a suggestion? What do you think about this? You see the whole dynamic change. And it's hard for parents to shift out of that role, and it's scary. But I think what we see is the people who come to college more ready, if I interview them and find out what happened differently for them, their parents started doing that maybe in middle school.
Yep, absolutely.
So I know it can be done. I know it can be done, and I think our goal, and Dr. Quinnen, my goal has been with the books we've done and the workshops we've done is to really try to change the tide for this population of really gifted young people.
Very, very well put. And so, Dr. Mayman, I can't tell you how much I appreciate you coming on the show. This has been very, very insightful. For our listeners, again, check out our books by going to Amazon.com and searching for Theresa Maitland. And with that, Dr. Maitland, thanks for coming on the show.
Thanks for having me, and I hope to meet you at CHAD.
Absolutely. Looking forward to it. So, everybody, catch us next week for another great edition of Attention Talk Radio. Take care.